I'm Nori Gomez. I'm the newest member of the Multicultural Affairs team. So I work over community engagement.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Megan.
I'm Megan Castleton. I work for the Multicultural Affairs team. I am the staffer for the MLK Commission. But outside of that, I am the graphic lead and program specialist.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lydia Baycraft. I'm also with the Utah Division of Multicultural Affairs, and I'm the youth and project specialist.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Heidi Talk. I'm director of operations for cultural community engagement. I'm going to be here for Kat and Donna. Mm-hmm. We'll
have
other obligations
today,
but I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. All right. So just as a reminder, we are glad to have a quorum. We will review and approve the August meeting minutes shortly, but I would love to kick this meeting off with hearing from Stuart Shelley from the Utah Shakespeare Festival. As you know, I got to go to see the play, The Mountaintop, and was just beyond moved, not only by the play itself, but by the discussion around the play. So I asked Stuart at the very last minute to drop in and just share kind of what he's been hearing about the play from the seminar, and then also anything else that you would want this commission to understand about the significance of this play happening now. So thank you so much and welcome.
Thank you. It is truly a pleasure to be with you. We loved having Ms. Stevenson with us down here, seeing the production, and extend the invitation to all. I know it's a bit of a drive, but if you're able to make it down to the festival, The Mountaintop will continue playing up through October 5th. And I promise you it's worth the drive to see this fantastic production. To contextualize just a little bit, about the Seminar Grove. For those of you that aren't familiar with Utah Shakespeare Festival, we have a space for discussion of all of our productions post-show. So you see a show, a matinee show, we're going to talk about it in the Grove the following morning at 9 a.m. You see an evening show, we'll talk about it at 10 o'clock the following morning. And we have these seminar discussions. We generally have Dr. Isabel Smith-Bernstein, who is our dramaturg and researches the shows, contextualizes them, as well as myself and Elena Mellon. We have a team that's in the Grove to answer questions, listen to insights, and talk about the productions. And this is probably one of the features that makes the Utah Shakespeare Festival experience unique. You can go see great theater in a lot of places, but most places don't offer a forum for discussion. So that's what the Seminar Grove is. It is a gathering of people who are excited to talk about the shows. The Mountaintop, which I'm hoping you're all very familiar with, but if not, is a fictional telling of the last night of Martin Luther King Jr.'s life at the Lorraine Motel, April 3rd, 1968. And it is, again, written by Katori Hall. It takes history that we are familiar with. It takes Martin Luther King Jr., who we are familiar with, we've learned about, and tells us a fictional telling of what that night looked like. And it is a stunning portrayal as he, at the height of the civil rights movement, more than likely was at his most lonely and most alone point as he was advocating for fair wages and was advocating for safe working conditions during the sanitation strike in Memphis. And what's most exciting about this is we at the festival / Southern Utah University have been dealing with recent legislation and making changes to what we call things, the way we do things, who's doing what. And it's been, I think, for us, it's been a frustrating journey to have to go on. It feels like sometimes you take two steps forward and four steps back. And as we've been dealing with this legislation, The Mountaintop has been a venue for open, free, honest discussion. And our audience members that have come to the Seminar Grove have been ready to talk and ready to, there's a lovely scene in the play where Dr. King invites the audience and says, pick up the baton, wherever you are, pick up the baton. And it has been encouraging, hope filled, and really a joy to see our audiences ready to continue the discussion and to pick up that baton wherever they are. I was talking with Michael Barr, who's the executive director of the festival, and he said this is akin to Hamlet. There's one of Shakespeare's most famous lines. Hamlet's trying to figure out, you know, what exactly happened with his uncle and his father. And, you know, if you've seen The Lion King, you've seen Hamlet, you know, Uncle Scar killed Mufasa. And in the play, there's this, it's this quintessential line where he says, "The play's the thing wherein we'll catch the conscience of the king." And I mean, it's for different purposes in Hamlet, but the play's the thing, the mountaintop is the thing wherein we have truly caught the conscience of our audience and our patrons and our those that are coming to the festival, and we've had beautiful discussions. And again, I'm hopeful amidst all the frustration and the language that we use. I'm hopeful. It has just been really encouraging. So I just wanted to share that with you, as well as extend the invitation to come down, yeah, if you're able to make it down and see a show. We would love to have you join us. So I'll leave it at that. And what questions do you have? Or if not, that's okay too. I'm a teacher, and if there's not questions, you know, that's fine. We're good.
Wait. Oh, sorry. I just had a quick question. How long is the play performing again until October?
So it will play through October 5th. I would encourage not coming down the 3rd through the 5th of October because we have our annual Shakespeare competition. And so those productions are already sold out. We've got 3,000 theater kids here dressed in costumes carrying swords around. So you probably would want to come before October 3rd through the 5th.
My cousin is performing. Nice. As a little high school theater kid, super excited for her.
Stuart, just one quick question in 2 minutes, so you have a minute to, before you got to go to your next thing. The young people that were, so the seminar I attended, there was a group of high school students, and their questions and their comments were just, again, was not only full of hope, but they are curious. They are thirsty to be able to wrestle in the best ways with these things, plus your background in teaching as well. Can you just kind of speak to that?
Yes. Our student audiences have been some of the best audiences. As you noted, they're ready to discuss this. They know the history book and the history class, Martin Luther King. But what this play does so brilliantly is it humanizes Dr. King and makes him very relatable, as well as, again, it's a two-person play. So the other character in the play is Kamei, who is the housekeeper at the Lorraine Motel, who brings him a coffee. And the entire play is the two of them talking back and forth and figuring out where they stand amidst the civil rights movement. And the students have really leaned into the fact that there's more than just the history. There's more than Dr. King on a pedestal. He was a man. He was a human. He wasn't perfect. He has flaws, as we all do. And yet, with those flaws, look at what he was able to accomplish. And can we not then do the same thing, all of us, as flawed individuals, as not, you know, we're not perfect. What can we accomplish? What can we do? Whether it's for the civil rights movement, whether it's for LGBTQ, whether it's for whatever the case may be. And that's where the students are leaning. They're like, I can make a difference in whatever venue they choose to put their energy. So it's been absolutely encouraging to watch the younger students, understand their potential, as change makers.
That's a perfect way to conclude. I wish you could say more. We could talk more about this, but you are busy. The festival is still going on. Thank you so much, Stuart, for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to be here. I will be back at the festival. I hope I can get back down there with a whole bus of people to see the play before it closes. So we're sending out good vibes for that. So thank you so much. Have a continued rest of best season this year.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure and an honor to spend time with you. I'll look forward to seeing you. Please come down, reach out, email me if you're coming down. I would love to chat with you and have a lovely day.
Thanks, Stuart.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'd love to acknowledge our guests who have attended, and Mike Maurer, thank you so much for
your presence. You're honored to be here. So.
And remind us, tell us.
Janine Locke.
Thank you. You've been here before, so we're glad to have you back.
Yes, thank you.
So we shifted our schedule for Stuart to be able to share, and then we will now go into the agenda. Since we have a quorum, good morning, commissioners. We will go ahead and review and approve the August meeting minutes, so we'll give you a couple of moments to review those. If you have any questions, corrections, updates that need to be noted, please let us know. I think that's everybody except for Commissioner Trebek.
And she informed me that she would not be attending.
Yes, so we are next quorum. Roll call.
Motion to.
Commissioners, if you are ready to make a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Thank you.
And that was Commissioner Nixon who motioned, Commissioner Weaver who seconded.
Yes.
Then roll
call. We will go to a roll call. Commissioner Chaberka is absent today. So we'll go to Commissioner Germu.
Hello.
Are you noting your approval?
Yes, I'm approving. Yes. Sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. Commissioner Nixon made the motion. Commissioner Stevenson approved. Commissioner Walton.
Approve.
Commissioner Weaver.
Also approved.
And because you seconded the motion. Okay, right. Thank you. The motion has been approved. The minutes have been approved for August 2024. Thank you.
Meg, do I need to say anything else about that?
No, they are motion to approve, so they will be voted on a public notice board later today.
Thank you. We will now move to, we're on time, move to boards and commissions representatives, Mike Maurer, Senior Advisor of Community Outreach and Intergovernmental Relations. Welcome.
Hey, welcome. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. And I don't see their name.
Oh. Nubia?
No.
Brooke Scheffler. She was not able
to. I'm taking her place.
Okay. All right. So everybody that's speaking on this part is here.
Yeah.
All right, Mike. Thank you for being here and giving us some guidance.
Well, it's an honor to be here. I loved your prior discussion when Stuart was talking. I've had a chance to visit the National Civil Rights Museum at the Horrid Motel twice, so you can picture exactly where that's taking place, and keeping alive the legacy of Dr. King. And so on behalf of the governor, we really appreciate all you're doing to advance human rights and Dr. King's legacy as a committee. Just to kind of let you know my role a little bit, and I'm joined by my colleague, Nubia Pena, as well, from the governor's office. We have approximately, and it varies by the year, just under 400 boards and commissions in the state of Utah. I will say that one of the most, and I bring that up to say, Brooke and I oversee the logistics of people getting appointed to those boards. I will say one of the most requested boards to serve on is this one. This one and the Hunting one and the University of Utah Board of Trustees are very popular boards, and in part because you play such an important role in our state. And so we appreciate that. So I was asked to come today just to kind of give an update on, I guess, on the board and how we do the board. First and foremost, we have in the past, and we're always looking, anytime you have 395 boards and commissions, you're like, should we be eliminating boards, combining boards, that sort of thing? Here's the news with your commission. There is, and I just confirmed this all the way in here, in the governor's office, there is no desire to change this board. Other boards we've consolidated and we've combined. We've done a lot of commerce. We've done a lot of others just because anytime you get 395 boards, it's a lot of boards and commissions. This one's important enough. that from the governor's office perspective, there are no plans for it to go anywhere. You do an important work. You play an important link between the state and the community, the people of Utah. And so that was one question I've been asked to address, that, you know, appreciate your work. We appreciate you taking time, Doctor, and the other board volunteers, a lot of them who are online, for your work. So we appreciate that. Then there had also been a question on House Bill 261. I'm not the expert, so I'm going to share a statement, and I'm going to harken back to what Stuart Shelley said. He's at the university where they're kind of dealing, and, you know, how do we get through this? And there was some confusion. And the statement is, people are asking, you know, one of your tasks is to promote different things in the community, but how do you do that with the passage of 261? And I had been sent the message, you can encourage all of these things as long as you don't promote treating people differently based on their personal identity characteristics, such as race, sex, religion, sexual orientation, national origin. And so, you know, kind of continue what you're doing. Also, I didn't know if any of you had had a chance to read when the governor signed the bill, he wrote kind of a personal essay on his accounting of his actions on 261, the Equal Opportunities Initiative. Let me just, if I've got a couple minutes left, he just wanted to highlight a couple of things there. It's possible to support our diverse communities and have concerns about the administration of DEI programs. HB 261 continues to support programs that promote student success, protects freedom of speech, and prevents discriminatory practice. And then he adds, while we have made great strides as a state and country, we must continue to work together to combat racism. There's tremendous value in getting proximate with those who are different than we are, and I'm grateful for the many partners who are working with us to make it a more inclusive place. I'm happy to share this with you, and then you can read that, and I think that can answer some of the questions, at least, you know, as an executive branch committee, which you are from Heritage and Arts, to see, we want you to continue to do your work. We want you to focus. There's nuance in how we're doing that, and it's, again, what Stuart talked about at the university level. There's nuance in how they're doing it, but what they're finding is we're supporting everybody more so. We're supporting, you know, all students rather than categorized is probably the best synopsis I heard of it. So if you like, who would be a good one to share this with, and then if they could share it with the rest of the
That'll board. Be me. So I'm Megan Castleton, so we've talked on the phone. We have a communication.
Yeah. So send me your contact, and then what I'll do is give me a conclusion. I'll forward this to each of you. You'll get a chance to read it, and I think you'll go, oh, okay, this is how it works. It's, you know, there's still extremely important work for the Martin Luther King Human Rights Commission to do. And I think you'll find you're able to do it, because so much of what you're already doing is this. It's community-based broadly rather than siloed. So I hope that made some sense.
Yes.
So, okay.
Do you have a few moments for questions?
Yes. And I will preface by saying I'm not the expert, but okay. I'm also an expert, though, at finding out who does have the answer, and I can get back to individuals as they want. So, yeah, any questions, I'm happy to take.
Commissioners, questions, comments, what you've heard? We will get a copy of the statement that Mike read, but in this moment, what's kind of coming up for you?
And if there's none, that's fine too.
I think part of the curiosity for me, and I'm glad you mentioned this, was about the nuance, right?
Yeah.
So this bill is in place, and you know, there are going to be not, I want to use this word, tests, but maybe that's what I mean, just be able to, that there is a shared a commitment to, you know, respect the law, but also help us to continue the work that we're doing, because there is no means to try to usurp it. And just knowing that there are folks around the table who are willing to kind of wrestle with this with us so that we can.
Well, and if anything, I think it showed, and this is me reading intent into the mind of the legislatures, but they last year they were going through, they eliminated 50 boards. Now they added 20, but they, you know, for a net loss of 30.
Sure.
They could have easily said, oops, we don't want Martin Luther King while we're passing it. They didn't. And I think they didn't because they know you're important. But again, there is some nuance in how you do it because you have a line in your code that talks about, all right, we're required to promote thus and such. But if that becomes confusing, we can always change or adopt a line of code, but we can also find, and again, the governor says it best, there's important work to be done. Your commission will continue to do it. And again, it's like the universities are doing. I talked to a university, former university administrator a while ago on this and said, how do I explain this to group? And he said, oh, the universities are still serving students, but they've kind of rebranded how they're doing it and they've expanded and it's again, inclusive of all students. So I hope that answers the point at all. And a lot of what I've seen you do is all people. The Martin Luther King Commission is not just for African Americans. It's named after one of our, 20th century's top civil rights leaders, but it expands communities beyond whether Asian American or Latino American or LGBT. It's much more expansive than just, African American. So.
Commissioners, again, questions, and if you have a question that may come up later,
reach out to me. Reach out to Nubia. Again, we can find the answers. And again, let me say how much we appreciate you being on boards and commissions. They're so valuable in the state because it's how we often get great free professional advice that state agencies could not otherwise afford. And sometimes they may give you a sandwich and more often not, we really appreciate your efforts and we hope. And that's why I wanted to come here personally today, was to express our appreciation, our gratitude for all of you for the time you're putting into this. Did you have a question?
I did. Well, I'm not sure if it's a question or kind of a comment and a question. So I'm just trying to kind of understand better the implementation of HB 261 because I do work with nonprofits that, serve specific communities, and I've actually been in spaces either in a class or in a meeting where I was in a class actually and someone with a bunch of people who work for nonprofits, and someone said, oh, all I know now is you can't say diversity, you can't say equity, you can't say inclusion, the way she was explaining it, I was kind of trying to understand also where she was coming from. But is there a toolkit or a guide to help those who do work with specific communities to know, to understand this law and what it means? Because like that nuance, we're trying to figure out, like, we are still serving a specific community as a nonprofit, but, we also, at all the things that we're at when we do outreach, any of our services are available to anyone. But the reason why we're a nonprofit serving a specific community is because there has been some kind of, health inequity, identified in research. So we're specifically, rolling out programs for a specific community because of that. But anyway, I was in a class and some of the other nonprofits were saying, so now, let's make sure we don't say anything in our mission or vision or anything using the words diversity, equity, inclusion. I think they were trying to be in
super cautious,
cautious and in compliance with the passing of HB 261. But at the same time, when I was listening to that person, I wasn't sure if even I was understanding the implementation of HB 261
Let me send you, go ahead.
It seems like those words are still okay, but they were just saying, we probably shouldn't have it in our mission or vision. We shouldn't, use this language in our marketing. We shouldn't, that, to me, seemed tricky to navigate, and so I was kind of thinking after that class, I wonder if there's somewhere where I can understand better
best practices
yeah. with, yeah.
Nonprofits associated with the universities or state agencies. Because 261 is not addressing nonprofits.
Yeah, no, I know it's not addressing nonprofits, but I think this particular individual was saying that their work ends up working with, like, students or with, I don't know. So it was kind of like this tricky, like, oh, you're a nonprofit, you're not a university, you're not a government agency. But at the same time, she was expressing, like, I want to be cautious. I don't want to be doing anything that's, like, not, you know, in code. But I was also wondering, okay, I thought this was just for universities and government agencies.
Right,
so
right.
then
but she should be okay. Yeah.
Yes,
be more
but
specifically
I mean,
for like the collaboration aspect of
I
not wanting
think it
to
was the collaboration
a collaborator
aspect. Right. That was what it was. She was like, we don't, since we do sometimes collaborate with universities or collaborate with government agencies, we probably need to like readjust our nonprofit at least like the wording and the messaging and things like that. And I mean, I hadn't even thought of that before because I was like, oh, we're a nonprofit, you know? Mm-hmm. So that is where I was thinking, is there something that is helpful?
Yeah,
let me send
you what the governor sent out.
Okay.
And then if you need further contact us, we can put together what some of the universities have done.
Okay.
But again, we're it's a nonprofit, it's different. And
yeah.
You'll understand 261 as well as anybody.
Yeah.
You know, they can still, you know, the NAACP can still, still exist.
Yeah.
You know, Equality Utah, those, you know, they're not state entities and they're not subsidiaries of the state. And
yeah.
So, you know, they continue to do what they do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for your question. And again, this is an ongoing
learning,
clarity,
learning
clarification
and
as we all engage in this new environment. So thank you, Mike.
You bet.
And
thank you so
yep,
much for the invitation to be here. And I will go answer these calls. And I'm sorry, I forgot to turn off my ringer.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'll follow up with you shortly.
Thanks.
So, commissioners, we're going to go through our next agenda item, our regular MLK philosophy segment hosted this month by Commissioner Nixon. Take it away.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. I hope everyone had the opportunity, since we sent it out last month, to read the Three Evils of Society, which is the reading for this time. I guess I first wanted to open it up and say, were there any things that stood out to people that you wanted to point out before we start? I have a couple points I wanted to discuss together.
I was reviewing it earlier and I think I was just, it was just shocking to me. And this is always shocking. Anything from the civil rights, movement, anything that, leaders spoke on, people involved, in things that feel so relevant to right now. It always shocks me. I'm always like, wait, when was this written? Let me read this again. Like,
this wasn't a yesterday thing. This was
exactly. And so, I think that is, powerful, just showing like the legacy of, MLK and just his ability to understand how to bridge gaps and knowing what we need to do better, as a people and to bring just more unity. And also, I'm always shocked by that. So that was one of the first things that stuck out to me, as I read it. I was like, dang.
So if I can unpack that a little bit, what did you feel like was so relevant or so?
Oh, let me find one of the lines. I remember because I was like, wait, what? Okay, hold on.
So while Rick, Commissioner Weaver is looking for that, her line, those that are visiting, this is a new segment as part of our regular meeting agenda where we unpack and kind of briefly delve into Dr. King's works, his speeches, his writings, and each commissioner is assigned they select the reading to have a short discussion about it. And I think for us, I want to thank the commissioners for engaging with this. It keeps us in a I think, in a pure sense of engagement with the purpose and focus of this commission. And so the information, this particular reading will be available in the meeting notes that are, I'm making this up, that are eventually made public. But if not, just Google the Three Evils of Society by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And then you will see what we have, we are reading.
Okay, I'm like, I think I'm here. I'm trying to see.
And commissioners, the link is also in the email I sent out yesterday in regards to today's meeting if you need a quick, easy access. But I will also share it in the chat now as well.
Yes. Oh, good.
Oh, this was one of the ones, one of them. It said, the fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of black slaves and continues to thrive on the exploitation of poor, both black and white, both here and abroad. And just goes on. That's just one of the lines. I was like, yeah, that's true. Ask me about my feelings about, you know, late stage capitalism. I'll go off for a while, but, the lines. I was like, wow, it's so true and, you know, unfortunate. But yeah, then there was one specifically I was thinking of, but you know how it is when you have to find something under pressure, you can never find it. That is my fatal flaw is, in a meeting, when I have to find what I need to, I never can. So.
Okay. I'm always intrigued at the timing of a particular writing. So this was a little over a year before his assassination that he wrote this. So he was clearly on a different wavelength, right? Yeah.
Any other things initially that stood out to people?
I think Commissioner Weaver said something. We didn't catch it.
Oh, I was just saying I hadn't considered, like, when this was. I didn't read that timing. But now that I'm reading that, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was kind of not in a different era, but a little bit of a different messaging than people typically share of Dr. King's.
Yeah, one thing that really stood out to me is he talks about, right, these three big evils, racism, economic exploitation, and militarism. As those are the three evils of society that he's representing. It was really interesting to me how he talks about how sometimes, this is my own personal thought, sometimes we view those things as three separate things, right? We have a lot of nonprofits, we have a lot of committees, commissions, et cetera, to address actually all three of those things. Or, you know, people who dedicate their life to solving and working on each of those issues. And yet, his one of his big points is that each of those three things is actually interconnected, right? And that we, you know, racism, for example, is fueled by economic exploitation can exacerbate racial tensions. Militarism affects the racism and how they're all interconnected and how we actually need to look at these not just independently but also collectively to help advance society and to have kind of a switch over to what he described as a society based off of love, justice, and nonviolence as the solution for those three interconnected evils. There was one specific quote I wanted to discuss for a moment, especially, you know, given the conversation we just had, which is he states that true peace is not the absence of tension. It's the presence of justice. So true peace is not merely the absence of tension. It's the presence of justice. What thoughts do people have about that? How does that say? I think, you know, often we think of, you know, this will all be solved when everyone just can go home and sleep quietly at night, right? Sleep peacefully, knowing all is well in the world. But it really isn't the absence of tension. Anyone have thoughts on that? If not, I'm a proponent of the Socratic method. I'll start cold calling people. Commissioner Walton, how can we have peace even if we don't have an absence of tension? What are your thoughts on that?
Michael, I knew you were going to call on me. I just knew it. Sorry, guys. I have a little puppy that I'm dealing with, so my mind is a little elsewhere. But, yeah, you know, that's a big question. And I think just with everything that's going on right now, like, it's something that I've thought about a lot, right, is, like, how do we wade through, like, how do we find, like, this balance in what's going on right now, not just here locally, but I think on a national stage. And so I'm not sure, like, I don't know the answer. I think for me, it's when we can all come to some common understanding. It's okay for our opinions to be different, but as long as we're all working towards the same goal of making our communities better, then maybe there's the balance. But I don't know. That's a big question. Like, it's a very, like, thoughtful question, but it's a big one for me that I don't know that I know the answer for right now.
Thanks, and thanks for letting me cold call you. Anyone in the room have?
Yeah, Commissioner Nixon.
Commissioner Walton said.
Commissioner Nixon, if I could mention this. At first I thought, well, so language is my thing. And so true peace is not merely the absence of tension. It is the presence of justice. So for me, when I hear anti-anything, that's only half of the outcome we want. Right, we live in a universe that fills voids. So if we're saying absence of tension, something's got to go into it. If there's a void, something's got to fill it. What are we going to fill it with? And we need to be intentional about what we're going to fill it with. So even just this conversation is reminding me how profound Dr. King was. He never dropped the mic without a next step. So he's saying, in the absence of something, what are we going to fill it with? We're going to fill it with justice. And even as Commissioner Walton said, that everyone at the table has a voice and they have the safety to share their perspective to solve problems. So true peace is not the absence of tension. Something's got to fill the void. What are we going to fill the void with?
Yeah, and I think there, that's where a lot of his, the subsequent parts of this essay or the speech, right? We need to fill that void. That's a really good way of looking at that. We need to fill that void with justice, right? People need to be able to have their rights upheld. Wrongs need to be corrected. And his solution kind of for transferring us there, for getting us there, is that we need to have a society that's rooted in love. Right, that we need to take, even though there is tension, it's tension that is being founded and approached and informed by love. And, you know, he does talk about how love is not, it's not a passive or sentiment, that's not just a passive or sentimental word, right, as we're used to thinking about it, right? But that love is care and active outreach to those around us, right? And that it's that love, it's that nonviolence, that will then allow us to bring that justice that, to your point, Dr. Stevenson, should fill that void. And I really think that's something that we can take into our commission work, as we move forward this month and move forward through the rest of the year, right? Is how do we promote those concepts of nonviolence? You know, we talk about those so much. We're all getting training on those. But also that active form of love, that form of love that helps us reach out to people, that form of love that helps us, push to correct wrongs within society and ills of society, these three evils. How do we incorporate that active love into our work so that we can, you know, help find peace and help bring peace to Utah, even if there still is tension. So thank you all for your participation today. I think that's the end of my time at this point. I appreciate it. And yeah, thanks for your comments.
Thank you. Thank you for leading such a wonderful discussion and again, another wonderful piece for us to chew on, not just here, but throughout our lives and throughout our work. Next month, we will hear from...
Looks like Rachel Weaver.
Commissioner Weaver is on deck for next month, so we look forward to what you will be sharing with us then. Thank you. Thank you so much, for commissioners, for continuing to engage with this. We will now move on to our multicultural affairs update. Would that be Ms. Nubia?
Yes. Good and happy morning, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be with you. And again, so thankful, Michael, for you facilitating that discussion and everyone participating. I did just want to provide some brief updates. Nori has joined us as a full-time team member. So you all know that Claudia has transitioned to 5 hours a week. She is still very actively engaged and participating. And Nori has been just fabulous to onboard, and she's going to be doing a lot of community outreach, engagement, having a better understanding of the Utah landscape regarding our partners, some of the concerns they're facing, and helping us elevate them through our multicultural commission. So really thrilled that she's joined the family. In terms of updates, family, I wanted to share with you, some of you, well, all of you should know that we had the big mural unveiling with JJYS. And I'm not sure if you saw the post. I did just very quickly want to share my screen. Tell me if you see this. Do you see the screen or do you see the picture? What do you see?
We see it now.
We can see it.
So do you see?
You have a screen in front of
you. Yeah,
okay. You can
see it.
There you go.
Okay, perfect. Megan, I should have just asked you if you could share this, but Megan's our tech genius over there. And so, but I wanted to just highlight this specific photo. As you can see, the babies are facing the mural that they created. One, because of privacy, we can't see their faces since they are incarcerated and they are currently still in the system. But more than anything, what we wanted you all to see was the amount of community that showed up for them. Family, there were tears. It was beautifully emotional to hear how 30 days of kindness transformed these young men and women. As we mentioned, we partnered with One Kind Act a Day, which is part of the Semnani Foundation. They were our primary sponsors. And we partnered with JJYS, the Division of Arts and Museums, OCA, which is Ogden Contemporary Arts. And we had two muralists, Tracy Williams and Rob Pacheco. And for 30 days, these babies engaged in a curriculum. The journal was created by Megan Castleton on our team, who is our design genius, and the content was creating in partnership with JJYS and OKA, and they learned about kindness. They participated in kind acts, and they acknowledged one another when kindness was shown within their division and their unit. What was interesting was that in 30 days, we were able to show a statistically significant outcome. There was a 67% decrease of violent incidents within the unit. Now, for these young men and women, many of them come from broken homes. They have been exposed to significant trauma. They have witnessed abuse. And so some of them early on were very hesitant about this journey and experience because they didn't value kindness. Mm-hmm. By the end of the 30 days, we witnessed kindness. There was one young woman who was very scared to share her remarks, and she started to cry. And every single one of the young women that had already taken their seats went up and hugged her and said, "You can do this." Now, mind you, for some, they might be like, "Oh, that's very nice." No, you have to understand why this matters. Within the unit of the girls' unit, we always have issues. Meanness, the mean girl issue, right? Pettiness, unkindness. And for them to practice sisterhood was massive, right? So it was just, we witnessed kindness even in this moment, this reveal, this unveiling. Claudia Loiza on our team was instrumental in helping usher this forward. Lydia Brooks is now doing this work with our Men of Hope and our Writers Who Hope series. The work that we're doing in the justice system was an existing gap that we were able to help fill with dynamic intervention programming that is actually showing violence reduction. Because remember, these kids will one day leave the system, and it's going to be on us if the system, if they're going to leave better than we found them. So what's also very exciting, team, is that Lydia is building partnerships, because this is work. There's just a very small team of us, and there's a lot of facilities with kids like these that need this type of programming. And so she is building relationships with Weber University, where they have a group of social worker students that are going to be taking over this program so that we can continue this in Ogden. We're going to explore partnerships with SUU and Utah Tech to see if they can take over this type of work in Cedar City and in St. George. We know that we're not the direct service providers, but we wanted to create a model that we could then scale by handing it off to people that care about these kids as much as we do. So love this picture so much. Every single one of our team members, Jenny Howe on our team, nothing gets done without it going through her first, because she approves the payment process. It has been a deep joy just to see how our small but mighty group of leaders come together with community partner and love kids that oftentimes are forgotten. And as you already know, as a defense attorney, these were my clients. My heart will always be with these individuals. We had phenomenal leaders in the audience. We had Ellie Madrigal, who is the owner of Rancho Markets. She participated in the reveal. Bill Krim from United Way showed up and supported. There's a documentary that's going to be developed from this to show the pattern, the process, and the evolution of how kindness can heal. And really, I'm just, you know, gushing over this particular picture because it shows that it really does take a village to raise children and to love children across the finish line. So my hope, family, is that as we are figuring out the commission's efforts, there are ways for us to plug you all in as mentors, teachers, and really people who walk alongside these kids. They need mentors. They need mama bears. They need big sisters. They need aunties. They need uncles. They need big brothers. They need family. So what better way than to tap into the brilliant and compassionate hearts that is, you know, our MLK Commission that really cares about justice and cares about the most invisible. And these kids are very much a part of that narrative. So anyway, just wanted to give y'all a little bit of that gushing heart story. Good work is being done in partnership with a lot of good folks. The other thing I wanted to share with you is that we are right now going through our strategic planning process for our division. Heidi Tack, which is in the room with you all, she is helping facilitate that. We went through one session. It was quick, but it was powerful, and we're very excited about what that can look like. We're exploring some opportunities of internal and external discussions, so just know that some of you may be invited to participate in a roundtable around, you know, who is the MCA, how can our brand really become relevant regardless of the times that we are navigating? And how do we make sure that our work is always impactful and giving back to the most marginalized? So more to come there. And then the other thing I wanted to share is that, you know, with the Olympics, you know, in 2034, with us receiving the bid, Claudia had an opportunity to participate in a roundtable discussion on my behalf while I was here in Philadelphia caring for family members that had a few surgeries. And, you know, it's very exciting to know that there are going to be opportunities for our emerging leaders, our communities to be a part of shaping what in the next 10 years this could be like. Because again, we know that in 10 years, our emerging leaders will be the ones who inherit this. So when we say, you know, we will welcome the world, how can we be a part of that? How can we help shape that? What does that look like? And how can we ensure that the opportunities reach us the four corners of our state? So, brief updates, But any question, I know that Lydia had something to share here in just a moment. So any questions about what I shared?
The mural project is so powerful and so excited that it's going to be documented through the documentary and just all of the outcomes from that. And was just thinking about how to be more intentional with making those mentorship connections.
Yes, we would love to explore that discussion. Maybe what we could do next time, Lydia, let's think about this a little bit, Megan, as well. Potentially inviting Michelle Sanchez to present, right, on some of the work that they're doing. I can tell you that we just had a community partner meeting with them, and they're always in need of foster families, which I'm sure we're not asking y'all, right, to start to adopt babies here. But hey, listen, if it's in your heart, I think go for it, right? Like we need good foster parents and people who are willing to be a safe space while these kids transition through some of the system. But there's other ways, right? There's volunteer opportunities. There's maybe the MLK Commission at some point. So October is not only Domestic Violence Awareness Month, it's also Youth Justice Awareness Month. So maybe the commission does something with one of our units and teaches them about some of the lessons learned through the modules, right, that you're all going through with the King Center. I don't know. It could even be as simple as a letter to your future self. If your mentor was MLK, what would you say about the community you hope to build and you dream of? Not sure. You know, there could be different things that y'all do, but something to consider. So we can talk about Michelle Sanchez coming and talking about opportunities for volunteering, participating, and partnering.
Sounds good.
Sorry. I know, Lydia, you had something you wanted to request the commission.
Yes. So an opportunity for y'all. We are planning our Youth Leadership Summit for November 7th and November 14th. Registration is open. We've already got lots of folks signing up, so we're super excited. And we have a lineup of great speakers that will really engage with the youth, and we're feeling really excited. Our theme this year is empowering the leader within. And one of the ways we want to do that is focusing on financial empowerment. And so we really wanted to introduce our youth to y'all as commissioners, and we thought that this would be a really fun opportunity for you all to share what financial empowerment means to you and how it motivates you and supports you in the work that you do. And this can be, you know, personal, professional, community-based, but we would love for you all to be able to send in a 15 to 25 second video just answering the question simply, financial empowerment means to me. And I'm happy to send out a document with just some background for it and to keep you updated on it, but would love to have y'all. I think our students, I mean, as we talked earlier about how students and young people are excited and engaged, I want to bring awareness to this commission to our 7th, 8th, and 9th graders and to get them thinking about next steps and to really, you know, engage them in mentorship. So super excited. And for folks in the room, if you would like, we can even just step out and do your recording now after this meeting if there's time. But please let me know if this is something you'd be interested in. I'll be sending out an email to you all. But yes, that is all. Any questions?
So a video is so easy, number one. Number two, it's really good when you capture at least me right away.
Awesome. Okay.
Although I would need lighting and all of that. So I'm joking.
Question. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Would you want the video recorded vertical or horizontal? These are like, you know, just basics to know. Important. When sending in video.
Yes, thank you so much, Rachel. So yeah, it will be horizontal. So horizontally, we're asking for kind of a basic background and to just be in a place with where we can see your face, the lighting is good, and there aren't too many sounds in the background. So no loud ACs or dogs barking preferably, but yes, be yourself, show up. We'd love to have y'all.
So you said go ahead, please.
Sorry, Dr. Sims. I was just going to say, for those that are interested, if you can just maybe let Lydia know, and we'll send you some guidelines for recording your video. We've used those in the past with some of our other speakers, and it was really helpful. So, yeah, let Lydia know. We'll send you a follow-up email with deadlines of when we need the video by so that we can combine everything into one. So.
Perfect. If possible, if there's anyone on the call right now that would be interested, if you just want to raise your hand, I'll just jot your name and send out an email.
Awesome.
Rachel.
Is the convention, or is the summit in person, or is it virtual this year?
It is virtual this year.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Did you get Commissioner Nixon?
Yes.
And I know, I believe it was Commissioner Walton who had to jump off for another meeting, but when we do our follow-up after the meeting, I'll be sure to reach out.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Lydia. Nubia, anything else? Okay, awesome. Congratulations on all the amazing work, the mural and the stories, and I want to see that documentary at Sundance. And wherever else it needs to show, to just show the amazing work and power of kindness and how you would think we would learn it early in life, or maybe we did and something happened. But it's always underneath all of that. And so this, what the project you described, just that's where the work happens, to unearth it and to rediscover it within us.
Yeah, thank you so much for that statement, Dr. Stevenson. And, you know, I think it goes really in line with some of the work we've been doing with Dr. Hellman and hope. Hope increases a person's likelihood of not feeling lonely, isolated, defeated, right? Decreases the likelihood of suicide. Like, how can we cultivate more hope and kindness in a world that almost feels like everything we see and experience is almost encouraging us to go against that, right? And so what is it in our work that we can promote these types of principles, but also how do we not stay surface level and also make sure we're addressing the very real and tangible concerns that, you know, there are people who are hungry. There are people who are facing housing insecurity. There are people who can't, you know, buy a home. Like, there are some very real struggles. And how do we also make sure that we are teaching tangible strategies that can help people as they navigate those storms? So, yeah, trying to figure that out. But again, that's also part of our strategic discussion. What is MCA's role? How do we make sure we are providing service that is beneficial, impactful, and necessary in this time? And so, again, you know, if you all have some questions before we get started into the formal process or recommendations, we'd love to hear those. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're still pacing on time really well, everybody. So we'll move to the next agenda item, the King Institute 360 Masterclass Experience with the Center of Economic Opportunity and Belonging. My goodness, man.
Nailed it. I was watching.
How many months have we been? At least two?
We officially voted for the funding in July.
Okay.
And then, so yeah, it's been definitely a process.
Wow. So, everyone, we are so excited that I think, and Nubia, please correct me. I think we have the thumbs up in terms of the content review, and we have guidelines in place around that is satisfying all of those requirements. I certainly want to appreciate Nubia and the team for their support in bringing in this all together around, you know, again, making sure that everybody is in good place and in good standing so that we can go forward. For those of us who may not know, we're so excited. The commission is excited to be able to partner with the Martin Luther King Jr. Center for Nonviolent Social Change and the Center for Economic Opportunity and Belonging
to create this inaugural cohort to go through the center's, Nonviolence 365 master class. This class has a fee associated with it, but because of the desire of the King Center to partner with us, they have allowed us to have a number of passes to access this course, and we will go through this course together as a cohort. Of course, we would want the commissioners to participate, and between the Center for Economic Opportunity and Belonging, we are gathering this number of people together to go with us. I'm just looking at this email, Megan, that you sent that I was trying to find earlier. We finally have a kickoff event, which will be in person on Tuesday, September 24th, from 3 to 4:30 p.m. at Industry SLC, which is located downtown. Again, this is where we can get as many of the participants in the cohort to be in place. That event and all of the events will include representatives and facilitators from the King Center to be a part of this work. And this is where the funding is going to support that, along with support from the Center for Economic Opportunity and Belonging. I also want to commend Commissioner Chaberka for her work as well in getting the Memorandum of Understanding together and so many of the logistics to make this possible. So, Megan, question.
Yes.
The commissioners have access to the...
We've communicated the code before. I know, Commissioner Nixon, you had some technical issues. I know we didn't get a chance to arrange a chance to meet before this. Are you still facing that issue? You are?
Yes.
Okay. So let's connect sometime later this week and see if we can troubleshoot. But I will also share the information again on how to activate your passport. In terms of the official invitations for our strategic partners, that's going to be sent out ideally later today. There were some technical issues with the mail merge, but I have figured it out. And so we are gearing up for, again, the September 24th kickoff. I'll also connect with Bailey from CEOB to make sure that our commissioners are also in this event directly.
Yes.
That way it's on your calendars. And Commissioner Nixon, did you re-raise your hands?
Yeah, first time was an error, second time was intentional. So with those partners, do we have a group of people we're specifically inviting to participate in this? Are there specific people we're targeting, or is this something we're still looking for people that we're to fill those seats or to participate in this program? How is that working?
Yes, so we have filled all the seats because we have a limited amount of passports for this experience. And because we're partnering with the Center of Economic Opportunity and Belonging, a portion of those passports were given to them to connect with the nonprofits. For a lot of our tickets, it's supporting our commissioners to go through this experience, our staff to go through this experience, and we're also reaching out to our multicultural commission as well to offer this experience to them too. So we have done some strategic partnerships in terms of developing this full cohort.
Okay, thanks.
For those, I'm going to put the commissioners on the spot, is there interest? Are you planning to participate? It is self-paced, and there are three points, check-in points, if you will. So the in-person kickoff, we have a midpoint virtual facilitation check-in, and then a closing celebration in November. But again, it is self-paced, so, maybe I won't put you on the spot and ask, but I would just, again, strongly, graciously encourage that participation. I would love to have 100% commissioner participation, and we're going to talk about that in the next thing.
And we have also offered this to the recent, this kind of ties into exactly. our next agenda item.
Yes.
The commissioners that have, or the applicants mm-hmm. who have applied for this commission mm-hmm. and are moving forward in the process, they will also be given a passport opportunity mm-hmm. to join in this experience.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. You said it better. So again, Megan will follow up with the, you all will get the invitation. You know, we've been talking about this for quite a while now. So now that we've gone through the necessary steps and we are ready to kick off. And I think this experience will enhance our MLK 2025, planning and results as well. So with that said, do you have any questions about this project? Everybody's clear on kind of what's going on and what's going to happen next. Any questions? Hearing none, we again will be following up with information that you can act on, and we hope to see you in person or virtually, or just see you in the space as you are engaging with the masterclass. Megan has kind of introduced the next steps for the next agenda item, which is the membership update and onboarding. Again, I'm so glad we have a quorum today. We have all of, other than Commissioner Chiberica, we are all here, and we have moved, advanced 3 applications to the next step in the process, which is a division review. I'm looking at Megan as I'm saying this.
It's also agency approval.
Agency approval.
Yes.
Division review, and then those names are forwarded to the governor's office. And again, that timing is ultimately contingent on the governor's office timeline. We interviewed 7 total applicants, and we're moving 3 forward. Thanks to Commissioner Nixon, Commissioner Weaver, Commissioner Chiberica. Am I forgetting anybody?
No.
Okay. For taking on, for being a part of those interviews, I think they were very informative. I think we try to be as thorough as possible, around what the work of the commission is, and so that it's a favorable fit for those who are applying, that it lines up with what they are interested in how they're interested in supporting this work in the state of Utah. So, did I miss anything, Megan?
I know that Commissioner Walton left, and I know that that's
yes.
what I
mm-hmm.
wanted to connect with her on,
yes.
since she will be overseeing the onboarding.
Yes.
When we are able to officially onboard
mm-hmm.
new commission members.
Yes.
And so I can connect with her
mm-hmm.
after today's meeting just to make sure that that process is moving along,
okay.
Which is hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yes.
And, I also know that, even though we're still moving forward with the process and, we are still inviting the applicants that are moving forward to join our meetings
mm-hmm.
and to kind of be included if they so wish, even as a community partner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do want to acknowledge Michelle Mooney. Thank you so much for attending
mm-hmm.
today.
Yes.
And hopefully this is a glimpse. You're getting a good glimpse of what the commission does
mm-hmm.
and you're getting excited for further collaboration.
Awesome. There was something else I was going to ask you as you were speaking, but maybe it'll come back to me. I don't know if you, I think it was news to me when Mike Maurer mentioned that this commission is one of the most popular commissions that people want to be a part of. All the more reason for us to have solid processes around the application process, the onboarding process. I think we're going to move to a schedule where so many times a year we will review applications. Even though applications will come in, when they do, it would be helpful for us to have a set schedule. So maybe 3 times a year, this is the cycle in which we will hold interviews with applicants, so that we're just kind of not piecemealing it, you know, 1 or 2 at a time. So I know that's one part of this process. And we want to get this solidified sooner than later. But again, it was an important and useful process to go through. And I think we are strengthening the structure around this work. And it was very affirming and encouraging to know that this commission is still of value to this state.
questions or comments about the membership update and onboarding? Anything? Okay. Last agenda item, MLK 2025. This is September. I have to say it like that so I can kind of like tell myself that it's about to be January really soon.
It's go time, people. It's go time.
It's go time. We keep this on the agenda. It also includes expanding partnerships. We do have a solid template that we can go with, and it's probably a good time for us to start putting down some action steps, a subcommittee. I know we're going to have some new contacts with the Utah Jazz. So what do we need to be thinking about in September to begin to lay down the tracks going forward? September, October, November, December, and then January. So barely 5 months.
And we are working on getting our new contact at the Utah Jazz established. But I think the major thing that will be helpful for me at this time is whoever is a part of the main planning committee for this, to also, for what can be done in September is, one, establishing who we want to do the outreach to. So what are some student groups, that we would want to make sure are part of this experience when we are able to finalize details. And two, the toolkit that is from 2023, we want to update. And so if I can get 2 to 3 commissioners to confirm right now, I would like to follow up either later. I would like to follow up next week to meet to discuss what we need to update. Because I know that's the main framework with our day of events, and I want to make sure we have something nice and updated as well. And Nixon, you've raised your hand.
Yes, please.
Commissioner Weavers.
I also, to kind of Megan's point, think this is the time where we start identifying as we look at expanding. You know, last time we talked about even, you know, working with cities around the state, working with organizations that have large amounts of either employees or large reaches. I think this is the month where we need to start identifying and, you know, next month deciding, okay, these are the people we want to done some outreach, we've seen some interest, gauged interest, and here's who we kind of want to move forward with.
So, Commissioner Nixon, can you put a pin in that for a couple of seconds? Utah Jazz event, Commissioner Nixon, Commissioner Weaver, myself, and I don't see the third hand. But Commissioner Germer, and then there was one more. Commissioner, Advisor Tuff. Okay. So that is that's the main committee, planning committee for the Utah Jazz event, which will be on January 20th. That's MLK Day 2025.
Hey, a few more days than we had earlier this year, so.
Don't know if the Jazz have a game that day, has a game that day. We don't have to worry about that today, but that sort of adjusts how we approach the day. But save the date for January 20th for the Utah Jazz Day. Commissioner Germer, and then I'll come back to Commissioner Nixon.
Yeah, Dr. Simmons, I know last time you mentioned if we can partner with the hockey team that is coming to Utah or is already here. I'm not really sure, but do we want to start that reach out as well now? Since it's early.
So now that's 3 things. Thank you, Commissioner Germer. We're trying to kind of compartmentalize this a little bit. Well, let's commission. What's your appetite? Do we have room to maybe replicate with the hockey team? I have no idea what their schedule is. But is that worth pursuing? And then I see Advisor Thompson's hand.
I just checked the Jazz schedule because I'm gonna be that person. And they do have a game, but they are away, and they are playing the Pelicans.
Okay.
On that day.
Okay. That could
hockey would be in the same building.
What was that?
Hockey would be in the same building, I believe.
Yeah.
The Delta Center?
I can check their schedule too.
Yeah, we could double up potentially.
Okay. there might be the opening there.
Right.
Okay. So we'll explore what a partnership with the hockey team might look like, especially if the Jazz has an away game. We usually don't try to do a makeup day. Usually don't, right?
We try to do something on the day of.
Try to keep it on the day of.
Mm-hmm. I know in previous years, there wasn't a game that day, but the youth were able to do a activity on the this year was a unique example because there was a home game mm-hmm. that day, so they were able to provide those game day tickets.
Okay.
But that might provide a little, if we are able to move forward with the Jazz Day experience, that might provide a little less chaos that we may have mm-hmm. to wrangle, but also more opportunities for partnerships.
Yeah.
There is a hockey game that night on the 20th at 7:30.
Yeah. So we want to partner with them.
Maybe something there.
Right.
So we'll pursue both. Let's see what the Utah Jazz might want to do. But then let's also see what this new hockey team might want to do as well.
Right.
Did I miss somebody else's hand?
You raise your hand earlier?
Yes, thank you so much. I'm so sorry. I didn't want to interrupt this discussion, but I was just, since Michael mentioned the opportunity of engaging with some of our other partners, particularly City, right? I'm also thinking of other commissions that are similarly positioned to us. And Michelle Mooney, she oversees their Human Rights Council. So, if there was some partnership opportunities there of hosting a gathering or a convening of, beloved Utah, what will it take for us to create this, right? So in addition to maybe the MLK event with our youth, maybe thinking about, what are some additional call to actions, right? Dr. Stevenson, you mentioned that MLK never once ended his remarks without being very intentional around the call to action. So how do we generate those conversations? Maybe the convening is the conclusion, the climax of the cohort that you're going through, right? Is breaking bread and talking about how will we now bring forth this, these principles into our day-to-day engagement strategies, our mission, how is it embedded in, some of our priorities? So anyway, just thinking about some partners that we may want to engage early on in the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you, Nubia, for that. And that's why I wanted to kind of separate it out. Some of us are going to be doing double, triple duty, which is great. But I don't want to lose expanding partnerships to get overshadowed with the Utah Jazz. That's why I'm trying to really be intentional about naming this. So, it can be me to think about this. I'm just going to say expanded partnerships part. And to be able to pull people together, commissioners together. Is this also appropriate to have community partners? We have Michelle Mooney on the call, who is over the Human Rights Council. Is it appropriate to invite her? I'm talking about you, even though you're here, to invite her as part of this conversation. Is that?
I think you can invite community partners into this conversation.
Okay.
These are just committee discussions that you're having. And so it's nothing that needs to be officially voted on with the commission. And so same way that, Thompson is a huge help when we're planning our MLK Day experience.
Yes.
I think we can invite whoever you want to invite to the conversation will be beneficial.
Okay. So Michelle Mooney, is this something that you would be open to participating in as a community partner?
Yes, I think the commission would love to join. They've been working on their community engagement efforts. So I think this is just aligning with their work. So that would be perfect.
Right, so far myself, Michelle Mooney.
You can definitely add me.
Thank you,
Janine. Yeah, I'm with a few different, three nonprofits are with.
Okay,
awesome. A Boulder Way Forward, mm-hmm. Utah Pacific Islander Health Coalition, and Utah Pacific
Islander Civic Engagement Coalition.
We'll see how this
also work with the Pacific Islander Student Association at West High School. So, Lydia.
Awesome.
Be in touch.
Yes. Commissioner Nixon, question or comment?
Yeah, I think to kind of, to your point, Dr. Stevenson, obviously we have very limited resources within the commission itself. And so I think the first thing that would be really helpful to look at this is, at least when I break this out in a framework in my brain, I see the commission working in three different ways, essentially, right? We have events that are the commission's events, right? That is, and like the jazz event is that, right? We are the ones that are working with the jazz, and that is largely kind of our hallmark MLK Day event. And I fully support that. I think it's wonderful. It was such a phenomenal event last year. And then I see, you know, there are two other types of events. There are events where we partner with an organization, right? And this is where both I see kind of as equal. We're both pulling pieces of this. Maybe that's kind of the first thing what we're doing with the jazz as well. But then I think that the place that we could see a lot of expansion that I would love to see us go this year is events that we facilitate, right? These are events that, you know, someone from the commission might not even be at, right? And we're not involved in the day-to-day or the day of logistics necessarily, but rather that this is something that we've worked on the back end beginning now to reach out to someone and say, hey, did you know we have this resource? Hey, what are you doing for MLK Day? Hey, how can we help you leading up to it, give you thoughts, give you, you know, encouragement, but ultimately this is still the, you know, the City of Sandy's MLK Day event, not the MLK Commission, because I just simply don't think we'd have the bandwidth to take on that many. And yet I still think that's a way we could, you know, to use the statutory language to encourage appropriate activities around the celebration of Dr. King's holiday.
So in 4 minutes, let's solve that. No. What could be a useful first step in that? Because right now I'm looking at four things. But in terms of this facilitation piece, again, and I think with our cohort, I think we could even think about some ideas that way. So we don't need to solve it all today, but what could be a useful first step that even the cohort could have on its agenda to kind of crystallize that this idea, Commissioner Nixon? Or anyone, welcome.
I think one of the, at least as I see it, the first steps is doing something that we did very late in the game last year, which is even just reaching out to people and or these organizations and saying, what are you doing? Right? Because I think a lot of cities do already, and a lot of these organizations do actually do something. Okay, great. You're well on your way. You don't need much help or encouragement for us, right? Westminster does not need help doing an MLK Day event. You guys are so on top of it. You know, so identifying that.
That one too.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. Just reach out, invitation type of thing, or, you know, request to some of our partners that we already have.
And even
some of them that we've
visited. Yeah. Commissioner Nixon, you had another hand.
No, sorry, I accidentally hit the hand instead of the mute button.
So I wonder if it's the other way around, and it could be both. We have the toolkit. Is there a way to maybe front load it with states? We are 5 months out from MLK 2025. Here are some things that you might want to think about. Here are some suggested activities. And if you have questions or, you know, want to think out loud, maybe to Commissioner Nixon's point, maybe we host virtual
like a webinar.
Virtual webinar on what are your thoughts about MLK Day? And although I think we might get questions like we got today about HB 261. So we would need to be thoughtful about that, on how much we want to put ourselves out there about that. I think we have a responsibility. I think a responsibility to be careful about that, but not, you know. But I still think there's, so maybe that could be away. I don't know if we have the capacity to get on the phone at every municipality in the state to do that, but maybe if we say, here's the thing, and we're going to host these two virtual webinars, and one in October and one in November. If you are curious, nonprofit, municipality, about what you could do.
I like that approach. It sets the tone and tenure and says this is a resource you can use if you want to do that. If there's other things, let's talk.
And overall, what I like about that is it takes things outside of the MLK season specifically and turns it into, like, how are we applying these principles and lessons year-round? And so I think if we do something in the spring and then something in the fall, we have an opportunity to do that. And so I think overall, thinking strategically of what we want 2025 to really look like, as we're going into the toolkit, really think about that framework of how we're making it not just here are the events that are happening or here are just resources that are relevant right now, but instead how can people apply a framework to their events? How can people apply an understanding to their events? What are ways to really uplift what people are going through, and how can they navigate some discussions through the framework of the principles of nonviolence? And so I think instead of it being a resource of, like, events that are going on, it's instead of, like, here's how you can navigate these kind of events. Here's how you can navigate these principles and ideas. And so just ideas is we're kind of revamping a lot with our toolkit, and that also makes it a little bit more evergreen. So it doesn't need to be updated every year, but maybe every 2 years.
Yeah. That's great. I love this. I love that. So, yeah, we don't have to do two. We can just do one. Okay. One in the fall, one in the spring.
Yeah.
Okay, get it. Because that would overcommit us, and that's not good. Commissioner Gurmu.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I think one of the maybe low-hanging fruits from a partnership perspective could also be the partners that we're inviting to participate in the nonviolence program that we're all going through. Because that could be an easy way to do the call to action based on what we learned from there. And since they're already participating, I think we can piggyback on that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There certainly can be a resource to inform what this thing could look like. Maybe it's after the cohort is done in November that we host that virtual thing to gear up to MLK 2025. Commissioner Nixon?
Yeah, two thoughts on this. I would love to work and to help on this piece particularly. I think in that case though, it may be best if I actually take myself off of the jazz list. Even though I want to help and support that event, obviously day of. This sounds like a little bit more or this sounds fairly time intensive that I shouldn't split my efforts.
That's what I was trying to avoid.
So, you're interested in just participating in the partnerships and toolkits and not necessarily the MLK planning.
The jazz event planning.
Jazz planning, yeah.
Yeah. I'll work on this other side. But that second point I was going to make is it sounds like where the toolkit is kind of the flagship of that effort. You know, whether we have that in conjunction with the jazz event or we want to take that into a separate space from the jazz event, talking about the toolkit, I'd like to still be involved in that piece of it.
Got it. So right now that's for that expanded partnerships, it's Commissioner Nixon and myself. Certainly welcome other commissioners to participate with us. I want to kind of get a meeting on the books sooner than later. So we'll follow up with that. We are past 11:30 by 3 minutes, so I apologize. I think we had a robust meeting. It's always an ambitious agenda, and we got through it, and we've made some significant process and got some good next steps in place. Anything for the good of the order before we head out?
I will need a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Perfect. And I need a second.
Second.
Oh, I got you down first, Nixon. Perfect. All right, then we are wrapped up.
Thank you so much. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you, guests. We look forward to continued partnership with you all. Have a wonderful day and have a wonderful month. We'll see you next.